Wednesday, April the 15th, was the third day of as busy a week as I'll ever live through. It began by me trying to reach Mr. DuPont, whom I respect a great deal, am quite in awe of, and need very much to spend a few hours of preparation with in order to learn more about this place and about what I'm going to say to the Committee on the Preservation of the White House when we have our meeting. I ran him down by phone. He said he had to return for a meeting to Wilmington. Couldn't come. We made plans for another time. And then, to my surprise, within about 20 minutes, I got a message that he was downstairs. He had decided to catch a later train. So we spent a couple of delightful hours pottering around and talking. He said he'd noticed. He made the following suggestions. First, he said that the night before in the Red Room, he had noticed that the mantelpiece needed a couple of ornaments. Mrs. Kennedy had taken the obelisk that belonged to her when she left, and he said, why don't you go down to the Vermeer Room and find two to replace them? And then, he said, that we have an enormous silver flat piece, a plateau for a table center, which is a gift to the White House, and we must find a place to put it. And if we can't make use of it, we must return it. Then, he said, we ought to move the chandelier from the green room. Perhaps we might move it up into the family dining room, the one we use on the second floor. And we must move the one in the family dining room down into the green room, because it is the one that has hung there for most of the life of the mansion, at least for a long time. There's always a story behind these things, and later on I found that the one that presently hangs in the green room was a gift of Chester Dale and was given with the specification that it must hang on the first floor of the White House. But now Mr. Dale is dead, and so perhaps it might be considered moving back the original one into the green room. To this venerable gentleman, this ultimate authority, this man who has done so much to make the White House the showcase of American beautiful furniture that it is, I have a lot of deference and gratitude, and I want so much for him to continue with unabated enthusiasm. Although I totally lack the magic of Mrs. Kennedy, which drew these people to follow her in a sort of Pied Piper fashion to the ultimate near perfection that the first floor now is. Lady Jackson, who has been dictating and working on the third floor since Sunday night, with very little real conversation with us, came down at 4:30 for tea with her good friend and mine, Florence Mahoney, in the yellow room. Linda and Lucy flowed in and out, and Lady Jackson kept on putting the world's most serious problems into the most simple sentences. Florence is going to make the world over by medical research, and Lady Jackson by ideas and executing them. One of her main ideas being that since urban life, city life, is going to be the way of the future, with American major cities growing 8% more each year than the population of the country is growing, our most urgent problem is to set about making the cities clean, functional, and beautiful, which they're a long way from, lots of them these days. We talked about acoustics, and the first place I ever saw that odd Greek word, a new city arising in the desert, some 15 to 20 miles from Karachi, where the science of how to build a city is being both studied and executed at the same time. At 6, I accompanied Lyndon to King Hussein's reception for us and 1,500 more people at the Mayflower Hotel. The diplomatic corps came down the line first, and it was my cue from Angie that after about 30 minutes, when all of them had passed through the line, that Lyndon and the King were to have some private conversation, and that would be my time to depart. So I did, thereby not seeing the other thousand or so guests clamoring at the gates. I rushed home, feeling strangely truant, jumped into my red lace dress, and went out to Warren Woodward's for his party for the Lord Hands. Unexpected, but I was sure quite welcome. And about the very moment I got there, up drove Lyndon, also unexpected. Woody, with his youth, charm, and talent for settling in, is already as much at home in Washington as a cat by the fire, has been promoted, and has a very nice house. There were many Texans, but also a goodly sprinkling of other Washingtonians. I left rather early to go to the Coliseum for the Lipizzana Horse Show. The Women's National Democratic Club very brightly has latched on to them for a benefit performance, of which I am sponsor, and they had been most anxious that I come. Linda and Wari were with me, and I had given my other tickets to Dr. and Mrs. Eric Goldman, whom I want to get to know better, and to the George Reedys, because I want George to be in the forefront of our planning and appearances, and to feel closer to us. And the other three tickets to Diana and to Gary and Jack Hopkins, who are visiting from Santa Fe. Lyndon, meanwhile, had returned from Woody's to have dinner with Lady Jackson and the Ed Clarks. The Coliseum was festive with enormous plastic chandeliers, and those handsome white stallions were beautiful beyond description. I didn't know that the Lipizzana horses are born black and turn white. They are descended from Spanish bred offspring of Arab stock, and they had been brought to Austria in the 16th century. The stars of the show were the white ones, but present also were the youngsters, the black ones, and then with varying pepper and salt on up to the pure, exquisite white. The most interesting part of it was a historical pageant with the riders dressed in costumes beginning with Xenophon of ancient Greece, the Renaissance, the great days of the Austrian Empire, on down to the present. Lucy's friends, Helene Lindo and Nancy Heckinger, came up and talked to me at intermission. They're so cute. I'm glad Lucy is getting to feel closer to the girls at National Cathedral. During intermission, I turned around and talked to Gary and Jack. Gary is making a great trip for her. She's come back for her 20th reunion, Shipley School. She's visiting her roommates in New York. One of them is the daughter of the Arthur Murray family who founded the dancing school. Then her husband and children are joining her here in Washington. They're going to see us at the White House, stay with Diana, and tour Washington from one end to the other. Bless Tony's dear heart. I expect he's behind it, both financially and in thinking it up.